Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Inside Syracuse Basketball with Mike Waters. Presented by Syracuse.com.
College basketball is a great thing. Anything can happen.
Welcome to the Inside Syracuse Basketball Podcast. I'm Mike Waters. Today on the podcast, I'm joined by former Syracuse basketball player Jason Hart. We talked about Jason's new job as the head coach of the NBA G League's Ignite franchise. Does he think the G League will hurt the college game? He discussed why he tried to get out of his commitment to Syracuse when he was a senior in high school, and why he never held SU's hard stance against Jim Boeheim. And we also talked about his son's recent college decision. We have a great guest today. And a lot of times Syracuse fans will ask me, oh, who's the best Syracuse guard ever? Or who's the best Syracuse center ever? And they'll ask me all sorts of stuff. And I don't want to say the best scorer was Lawrence Moten and get Carmelo Anthony mad at me. So a lot of times I'll straddle a fence on those questions. But if anybody ever asked me who the hardest working player in Syracuse history was, I never hesitate. It's my guest today. It's Jason Hart. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing good, Mike. Glad to be here. And it's great to be on with some familiar faces in yourself. And just happy to be here with you, man, to do this interview.
Well, like I said, the hardest working player that I've ever covered in all my years here covering Syracuse, I just remember how hard you would work. And then, listen, they've had some kids lately that you'd like. They've had kids that are made from the Jason Hart mold. Tyus Battle was a hard worker. Elijah Hughes put in the work. Buddy Boeheim is out there working all the time. But Jason Hart, folks, never let up. And that was something that you brought with you straight from high school, wasn't it? And that was just a character trait you had.
Well, I always knew that Syracuse wasn't going to be forever. And so I just told myself from day one, I just wanted to work as hard as possible. And for me doing that, I wanted to show the school respect. It was an honor. It was an honor to play for Syracuse for 4 years with all the great players that came before me. And so I just wanted those guys to be proud. So I was more playing just to get their approval. And that's how I carried it for 4 years. The outside world didn't matter. As long as Derek Coleman or Lawrence Moten said I did a good job, that's all I was looking for.
You also have one of the longest standing records in Syracuse history. You are still the all-time leader in steals in Syracuse history. And it's not even close.
Wow. Well, I came in from high school with some anticipation skills. And once I was able to learn the zone and figure out where I can get those steals, that made it easy. And then I knew I had Etan Thomas, probably the best shot blocker in Syracuse history. So it made my job easy. I know if I missed it, I know he had it. So we worked good together.
I would say Etan is the best shot blocker in school history, and I know he holds the record. But if I did, Roosevelt Bowie, who still lives locally, would get really mad at me.
Right. How many Etan is up on Roosevelt?
A good bit. Broke Roosevelt's record, if I recall, at the very beginning of your senior year, Etan's senior year.
Okay. And I remember I broke the steal record my junior year at Seton Hall. I remember.
You remember?
I definitely remember. I think Hop told me, somebody told me, and it was at Seton Hall. maybe like on a Sunday. I'm not sure, but it was my junior year at Seton Hall.
What was it like for you to be an LA kid, Southern California kid, to come to Syracuse and spend 4 years here? I mean, what convinced you to come and what convinced you to stay?
Well, you know, coming from Los Angeles, we grew up, everybody in LA, we grew up obviously watching UCLA, but we also grew up watching Big Monday, because you got to think the games would come on in LA at about 4:30. So we're just getting out of school, and just the bands playing, Bill Raftery's voice, watching all these great Big East teams battle. So we always admired that. And that was like big time. And if you can remember back then, no West Coast teams was playing on ESPN. We was playing on local channels at home, Raycom Sports, Prime Sports. But ESPN, to play on that, that was elite. And so for me, I wanted to do something different. Obviously, I was more of a late bloomer in high school. So Syracuse just fell in place with me at the right time. I played well in front of them, got an offer. I know now that Mateen and Shaheen were ahead of me, and they was playing the dating game and recruiting. So once they offered me, I'm coming. that's how I was. I wasn't playing with it. Once they said, you want to come, I came. And that's how I ended up there. But also, Mike, I had a great 4 years. I knew, like, playing with, like, Eton or Ryan Blackwell or even Damone Brown, one thing that was all the common thing, everybody said it was cold. Well, they're from the East Coast, and they're cold, too. So it didn't really matter. That took away the whole element of the coldness, and just had a great time. It's a great place to go to college, too, so I enjoyed my 4 years.
I remember one time I was doing a story on you and Tony Bland, your buddy from Southern California there, and we took a picture of the two of you in beach chairs with beach umbrellas and parkas on in the snow right outside the Carrier Dome to kind of juxtapose the California kids playing in the Syracuse snow. What were your memories of our Syracuse winters here, being a California kid?
I think it was the only time that it got really cold was when we had winter break, when all the students would go home. And so our schedules would change. It wasn't as much activity. So we would go to practice at home, and you spend more time at home. And that's when it really got cold, like during that Christmas time. And so those are the memory. But I think we had a snowstorm, maybe my junior year or sophomore year, where too much snow hit the top of the dome. And I think we had to maybe cancel a game versus like Seton Hall, or St. John's or something. So that was my memory vaguely of a snowstorm. But other than that, I enjoyed putting on some Timberlands. Hadn't wore those until I got to Syracuse. I enjoy putting on a big coat. I enjoy putting on a beanie. And actually, I miss it because it was just a change of scenery for me. And now that I'm older, I'm living back on the West Coast in California. So I do miss those winters.
Was it hard for you? I mentioned Tony Bland. Was it hard for you when Tony decided to transfer back to the West Coast?
Well, you got to think, when Tony left for back home, that's when I graduated.
Was that going to be your senior year?
That was. So Tony came in 98.
Okay, I got you right.
He did 2 years. So when he transferred, I graduated. So, I don't know if he was homesick, but he just obviously transferred. So we got out of there at the same time. I think some days he probably wished he probably would have stayed, but he went on to have a fabulous career at San Diego State, and everything worked out for him.
It's funny the way you talk about Syracuse, and I've talked with you before about your years here, and well, you talk about it in just glowing terms and fond memories. But I remember your senior year of high school, there was a whole thing there where you were trying to get out of your commitment.
Yeah. Yep. I was trying to get out of my commitment. My brother, he got sick with the kidneys. And he just got out of the hospital maybe last week. So he's still battling that part of his life. To this day, yeah. To this day. So the kidneys on the heart side of my family are, with my dad, just my dad last August, he got a kidney transplant last August. And so my oldest brother, he got one too as well. And actually my brother Jadifi, who I want to stay home because of him, he's on dialysis currently right now. So he doesn't even have a functioning kidney.
And your older brother, that was Robert?
Richard,
okay.
Richard, yeah, it's my older brother's Richard. So he's doing good. He has a functioning kidney. My dad just got a transplant last August. And then my brother, who I was going to stay home for, he's on dialysis right now. So we just trucking along.
When you ultimately had to come to Syracuse because all your appeals and everything were denied by the NCAA, and I think there was some other body there, the Collegiate Commissioners Association, was there hard feelings at that point? I mean, did you feel like you had been forced to go to a place that you no longer wanted to be?
It was my heart. I wanted to go there. So it wasn't harsh feelings on my end, because that's where I wanted to go. I was just young at the time and thinking if I can stay home, I can help. But, you know, my brother's, you know, he's still alive to this day. And my dad is, you know, we're going to be all right. So once I heard that, it wasn't like, damn, I got to go. It was like, okay, I'm back on my dream and back to where I really want to be. And from day one, we never talked about it. You know, I never used that as a crutch.
Really?
Good game, bad game, cold. No, we never talked about it. And I got to Syracuse, that was a time of my life. From 1996 to 2000, other than when I had my kids, that was the time of my life. I would cherish that memory for forever, because it's something that I grew as a man, but it was just a place where I became a man and I learned a lot, and the people around me was just great. And I really considered that my second family.
What's your fondest memory of those 4 years?
My fondest memory, man, well, one of them was in 1996, October, it started snowing. And I said, damn, I said, Rock, it's snowing this early. He's like, man, we up in upstate, it's snow. And so I remember it was like right before Halloween, it started snowing. And once I got over that phobia of snowing, it was downhill for me then. But I just couldn't believe that it was snowing in like October. I thought we had to wait till like Christmas or something. So that was my fondest memory of getting used to my new surroundings.
Okay, now you have now mentioned your kids and you've mentioned Rock Lloyd. So I have to say, you know, just recently, it was over this past weekend, your son, Jason Jr., I can't believe you have a kid that's a high school senior, by the way, but man, he committed to Long Beach State.
A place where my roommate, Rock Lloyd, transferred from Syracuse to go. And when my son committed, he texted me and said, tell your son, welcome to the family. I'm like, man, me and you was family at first at Syracuse. So this whole basketball thing is like everything is connected somehow, some way, man. And obviously for Rock to reach out, that was a great thing. But for my son to be going to his school when he's from New York, it's just crazy, man. It's life is everything they say is full circle.
And Rock's son, Ramel Jr., but yep, I know he has a son, yep. Same, right? He's going to Nebraska.
He's going to Nebraska. He's going off to the Colt. He's a big time talent, and he's going to do really well there. And, you know, the goal, obviously, when you have a son, you hope they will want to play basketball. And if they have a chance to be good enough, then, you know, obviously you want everything that comes with it. So happy for his son and his family as well.
Now, for the last several years, and I've kind of lost track, what, 7, 8 years? You've been an assistant coach at Southern California.
Correct. I've been an assistant coach starting in the 2012 season. I was assistant coach at Pepperdine. Mm-hmm. I worked at Pepperdine for 1 year for the 12-13 season. And then from 13 until 4 months ago, I was at USC. The last four, maybe I was associate head coach at USC.
Now, you left USC, as you mentioned, 4 months ago to take the job as the head coach of the G League Ignite. And that's a team in the NBA's G League. And it's really kind of a new team. Like, it's only about a little over a year old.
Right.
And it's got a lot of the younger kids. It's got the kids that ordinarily would have been college freshmen. Last year, Jalen Green, number 2 pick in last year's NBA draft. Jonathan Kuminga, another lottery pick. He's with the Golden State Warriors. They played for the Ignite. At where you were with USC, and you guys were doing really well at USC, why leave that gig and the college game for the Ignite?
Well, every assistant coach, Mike, as you know, our dreams, supposed to be our dreams. I can't speak for everybody. My dream was to become a head coach. To become a head coach, sometimes they say you don't have experience. So I've always been one to bet on myself. I don't need nobody to bet on me. I bet on myself. This was a perfect opportunity for me to learn. Coach five-star level kids, which is similar to a college setting, still teaching them the same teachings. And then also get back to, you know, the game of the NBA game. Obviously, the college rules are different than the NBA, but it was a way for me to be a leader in the NBA setting and coach the same age kids I'm accustomed to coaching in college. And so for me, it was a no-brainer. I interviewed for it, and I thought I did well in the interview. And then obviously I was able to be hired and become the head coach of the Ignite. So a lot of people was asking, what are you doing? What's this or that? I'm going to become a head coach. I did the assistant thing for 9 years. And so I didn't want to be an assistant forever. I just wanted to be a leader. I'm a point guard. I need the ball in my hand. And so now I have the ball back in my hand. And I think right now I'll be able to learn more. And then I think I'll be a more attractive candidate in the future of anywhere else that's looking for a head coach. And that was my goal. And I'm happy I'm in the right spot. It's a dream job for me. And I'm just ready to get going.
I mentioned some of those players that were on the Ignite last year. They could have been in college.
Yeah.
Is the G League and the Ignite, is that something that college coaches are worried about or should be worried about, that they're going to be taking guys from the college game?
Well, I don't think college coaches should be worried about the Ignite. I mean, obviously, the players that we are looking for, normally they would go to the typical blue bloods, right? And so I don't think other colleges have to worry about with the Ignite team, if you was a mid-major or even a low major. We are recruiting, but our recruiting database is 12 kids. You know, yeah, it's the difference. So we try to identify the players that we feel have a chance to be one and done. You know what I mean? And so that's what we go after. And it just give them an option to either go to college, because we don't disrespect the college game. But if you seriously considering NBA in 1 year, instead of wasting a college a scholarship, come to the Ignite and start learning the pro rules and get the pro training and get paid for it legally. You know, I know they have the NLI now, but you can legally get paid here. And, you know, you can start learning finances, start learning how to manage your life off the court. So there's some benefits to this. And obviously, Jalen Green and Jonathan took advantage of it. And now they're NBA ready in terms of verbiage, the 3-point line, not learn how to take care of their bodies. And then they're playing against grown men. So they understand and they respect. When they get to the NBA, they respect every player because they know it takes hard work to get there.
And the Ignite's relatively new, only really one full year in. And with anything, it seems there's always like a period of adjustment or getting things straight. I mentioned Jalen and Jonathan Kuminga, who obviously it worked out for. They're both lottery picks. This was perfect for them.
Yeah.
There was the other kid that was supposed to go to UCLA, Nix.
Yes.
His first name escapes me all of a sudden in the middle of the podcast.
His first name is Dacian Nix.
Dacian, that's it. 6'5" guard. The memory's coming back again. He played for the Ignite last year, and then he didn't get drafted. Yes. Now, I think he is in somebody's camp right now in the NBA, so maybe things will still work. But is he like an example of how the Ignite and people around it and even the players who are considering it still have to figure this out?
Mike, the Ignite is not for everybody, but Dacian Nix, he had conviction, and this is the route that he wanted to take. It's no guarantees that Jalen or Jonathan would have went 2 or 7. This is a place for a convicted athlete in terms of their mindset. I'm going to be a pro, and this is it. And then obviously, I'm the results is how good I play. So these are more so guys betting on themselves and believing their ability. And you skipping out one other guy is Isaiah Todd. He did get drafted. He was the 31st pick of the second round. And so
basically a first rounder. He was this close.
Yeah. And so another player who bet on himself and played well enough. But again, this place is not for everybody. We don't try to solicit players who obviously need to be in college. But if you strongly feel that way about your game, like this would have benefited for like a Winfrey Walker.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it just, he would have, now if this was 20 years ago and this was for Winfrey Walton, he probably would have had a long NBA career because he was able to come here and learn. He was talented enough, or like a Tim Thomas, you know, those type. And so that's what we kind of looking for, that type of level of talent.
A kid from the States, instead of maybe a few of those kids have gone and played in like New Zealand or China, just a couple, but still they wouldn't have to go to a foreign country for that year. They can stay here in the United States.
And when like RJ Hampton and Melo Ball went to play in Australia, I think the guys that formed this team said, you know what, we're going to offer the same format to keep our talent, our American talent here in the States, and have the same setup, same housing, same training, same coaching here in the States. And it's just another option for these players, because it's far too many one and dones, obviously in the college game, but you win more with your 3 and 4 year guys than your one and dones. So if you're a one and done, it's great for a program because you'll continue to get that level player, but a program is winning with guys that stay in school for 3 or 4 years. That's just the facts.
What's the difference between the Ignite of the G League and this other new outfit, Overtime Elite?
You know what? I don't have any, like I haven't sat down and read on Overtime Elite, so I can't answer that one. I know it's high school kids going there, and that's about all I know. I don't know who they're playing against. I don't know how their schedule is set up, so I can't answer.
Okay. Yeah. But you're right. There is, the biggest difference is they're getting kids who are actually still in high school.
Right. And have multiple years left in high school. Right. So,
and paying them and setting them up and stuff like that. That'll be an interesting experiment to see how it works over the next few years.
Okay. Well, and then like for one of the differences, obviously, is the G League Ignite, we're playing against the Lakers minor league team and the Clippers minor league team. So it's, we're playing in a format towards pro setting. And so, you know, it's watched closely by every GM, because every GM is watching their minor league team. And so while they're watching their minor league team, they obviously get a chance to see our young guys.
So you've been out at USC for all those years, your West Coast. So the last few years within your conference, there's been a familiar face on the sidelines up the coast in Seattle, Mike Hopkins up there at the University of Washington. What's your opinion of where Mike's at with that program? Because I know his first 2 years really, really did really, really well. Coach of the year in the Pac-12, right? The last 2 years, it's been a little bit more of a struggle for Hop. Where do you think he's at right now?
Well, I think mentally, speaking to him not too long ago, I seen him in California Los Angeles, maybe about a month ago. He was out there recruiting. He still have the same energy. He's upbeat, spirited. I think he had, you know, 2 tough years, but you know, in this coaching business, you're going to go through that. Nobody's immune to it. And so it's all about the bounce back. I think his team is he was able to reload and get some good players in there. And so I'm rooting for him this year to kind of get off that snide and get back to what he's been doing the previous 2 or 3 years.
Going back to your playing career at Syracuse, you mentioned Mateen Cleaves in your recruiting process. Mm. Your last game was against Mateen.
Yeah.
And of course, Syracuse fans hate talking about this game.
We do too. We, as players, we have a group text. We still hate talking about it.
So it's the Sweet 16 against Michigan State at the Palace in Auburn Hills. I mean, can you take me through that one? Because I know you guys had the big lead early in the second half, and then Michigan State just got on a roll.
Yeah, so it was a game. We was the 4 seed. They was the 1 seed. We was playing essentially we was visitors. They was playing a home game, being that obviously Lansing is close to the Auburn Hills. I thought we came out and did an excellent job. We started fast, was able to get up on them, and they made some second half adjustments, made a lot of threes, and we just couldn't hold them off. It was one of them games for me as a player that I will remember that particular game forever, because I really feel in my heart that we had everything you needed to win a championship. I think that, and then it hurts even more because they went on to win the championship and we was beating the champions pretty good.
Yeah, so, you were.
Yeah, we was beating them pretty good, handily too. And so I think that that's one team that season that I will never, ever forget, because that 2000 Syracuse team definitely could have won the championship that year for sure. Because we had been through every emotion of building a team. And we had a lot of losses prior to those years. And that was one of the years that I think we was ready to finally get us the championship. Bayon, it would have been Bayon's first.
You guys, I mean, I remember that game. I remember mainly the crowd. Yeah. You mentioned it was kind of a, I mean, that place was 90 to 95% Michigan State fans. And the other 5 to 10% was not Syracuse fans. There's two other teams that have fans there. So it's
Iowa
like,
State.
Yeah. And I forget who Iowa State had on their side of the bracket, but you know, there's the other group. So the Iowa State fans and whoever else they were playing, they weren't exactly yelling or anything.
Right.
Yeah, you guys were up against it. Didn't Etan get in foul trouble?
Etan got in foul trouble, and it kind of like threw him off because he couldn't be as aggressive as he wanted to because he didn't want to get, you know, fouled out. So, that game is on YouTube, so I ain't watched it a lot. I'll probably watch it 3 times a year. And so I watched the first half and then slowly watched the second half later on because we was just up so great. And then Alan Griffin came off the bench and was really, really good in the first half. And so, like I said, we had one of them teams. We had everything you needed. We had length, we had size, shot blocking, guard play. We was deep. We had a lot of depth. And
experience too.
Man, that was very much experience. Me, Ton, and Ryan Blackwell had played already in over 100 games. So, you know, that was just one. I would never, ever, ever forget that particular team. That was probably the best team that I've ever played on, you know, period. I know I played on the pros with some good teams, but that team, that was a special team.
You know, you've left the college game now, at least for now. Who knows? Maybe we'll see you back. But, you know, one of the big new things in the college game right now is the transfer portal. Yeah. And the players having the ability to transfer and play right away without sitting out.
Yeah.
How is that going to affect the college game? Is the college game going to be okay? Or is this going to have – it's good for the players. I get it. They should be able to do it. But is it going to be too much for the college game to handle?
I disagree with COVID. I thought, okay, that was cool. But I don't think they should be able to just go and play right away. I don't. I think if you transfer, you should be able to sit out and then, you know, sit in residence for a year and then come to play. Or the other way, if you graduate in 3 years, then you should be granted to play because that showed that you was a student first. But okay. Wow. I think the college game is going to always be fine because you're still going to have young men in the college setting, being student athletes, working hard each day, and you're playing for your school. You're not getting paid, essentially. And so I think the game is going to always be a great game. But I do think the transfer portal, it hurts high school seniors because college coaches, they don't want to get fired. So they'd rather go get a grown man and plug him in as opposed to waiting on an 18-year-old Jason Hart. So I just think had this way they're doing college basketball, had this been implemented 20 years ago, a lot of our favorite college players, we would have never heard of them because they wouldn't have got the opportunity.
I'm wondering a couple things. I'm wondering if the transfer portal was there, if like maybe Coach Boeheim doesn't fight so hard to keep you to your original letter of intent. I'll find someone in the portal, fine, let Jason Hart stay on the West Coast. Or conversely, like Alan Griffin, you mentioned him earlier. He starts as a sophomore. His junior year, he comes off the bench instead, loses his starting job. A lot of kids would get upset and leave halfway through that season. Instead, Alan stays, and the year after you graduate and Tony transfers, Alan becomes a starter again as a senior.
Yeah, and that mindset, Alan obviously was a tough kid. So when he came to Syracuse, he committed to the school for 4 years. And that's him doing it even back then was a salute to him because even back then you still had transfers. But in today's era, it's totally different. If they don't hit the ground running as a freshman, they're leaving. So college, and then back then college coaches wasn't getting fired as fast. So everything has changed. Everything has changed. Everybody, you have to win now, and you have to win consistently or you'll get fired. And with that came with the surge in salaries for college head coaches. College head coaches are making $10, $8, $9 million a year. That's more than like 50% of NBA coaches. And so when you have that, pressure builds. And so now it's an expectation. Now you want to be good. So you want to stay old. Old wins in college. Old win. If you're old, normally you're going to have a pretty good team.
As I recall, you started all but one game in your Syracuse career. Am I right?
Yeah. Coach Boeheim, man. Coach, you did that to me, Coach. Yeah, I went home for Christmas my senior year, and I think we had practice Christmas Day. And lack of judgment. Well, not really lack of judgment. I said, I'm going to stay home for Christmas. I'm going to come back the next day. And we played St. Bonaventure's 1999, December something, 27, 28. And when I got back, he gave me the spiel about I'm not starting. And he broke my streak. He broke my streak. And at the time, I wasn't really mad, because what I did, I know I accepted my penalty, and that's what it was. I didn't start the first 2 minutes of the game. But looking back on it, I wish I could have started to have that, you know, however many games played, started together. So, but I stayed home for Christmas, Coach Boeheim, because it was my senior year, and I wanted to stay home with my family one extra day. You could have started. But yeah, I missed one out of the however many games I played there.
That's brutal. That's just so brutal. It's like the only game you didn't start.
Yep.
Oh my God, I remember that. In fact, I don't know. I thought that you would like had a flight but missed it, or got the, and it wasn't. But no. So now you're correcting the record on that part. You knew exactly what you were doing.
Oh yeah, I'm staying home for Christmas. I'm gonna fly out on the 26th. I stayed home intentionally. You know, we had practice on Christmas night at 7. So that means I would have to leave essentially on Christmas Day at 5 in the morning, because you know it took 12 hours to get back, because it's no straight flight from LA to Syracuse. So you had to stop. At that time, it was Chicago or New Jersey, depending on what airline you went. So now I stayed on.
You know, we mentioned your friend Tony Bland a couple times here during our conversation. I can't let you go without asking about him.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, Tony got caught up in that FBI investigation, and you know, he lost his job, and he had his career arc was like soaring.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. He had such a great reputation as a recruiter at both San Diego State and then USC. You know, how do you feel about everything that happened to Tony? And I don't know if you've seen him or talked to him lately. How's he doing?
Tony Bland is doing really good. Actually, this is a small world. So, you know, obviously when my son and Rock's son were playing together in high school at Taft, you know, when COVID hit, the school LAUSD shut down. So it wasn't, you know, there wasn't no more basketball. So Rock's son went to Sierra Canyon. My son ended up transferring to St. Bernard's. Tony Bland is Jason Hart Jr.'s high school coach. So for me as a parent, who else better to coach your son and teach him the game the right way? So Tony's a high school head coach at St. Bernard's High School in Los Angeles. He'll be eligible in a few years to get back into the college game. So the way life is going full circle, you just never know how this going to be. We may end up being back together one day. So he's doing well. His family, his wife, his kids, everybody's doing really well. His oldest son goes to Princeton, plays football there, Princeton. So, yeah, he has that's Anthony.
Wow.
Yeah, he has a son there. He plays football for Princeton. So Tony's doing really good. Bounced back all the way. And now he's back with that same big smile that we all knew. And, you know, everybody in L.A., that's what everybody wanted to see.
Do you think there is a chance that he'll get back into college coaching?
Oh, most definitely.
Right.
Yeah, most definitely get back into college coaching. Again, like, obviously, whatever transpired, it was a mistake. we live and we move on. And for sure, he'll definitely get back in the college game. He just offered too much to a program. And so he'll be back for sure.
Well, that's good to hear, because I liked Tony a lot when I covered him in his 2 years here at Syracuse. And I know you two guys are close.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea he was coaching the high school ball and coaching your son.
Yeah. Yeah. So, hey, like I said, remember, I told you, if you just keep on living life, everything comes back full circle. And so I've learned to live and just, hey, see what's next, because it's always going to be something good.
Well, you're right. Things do come full circle, because who would have thought 21 years ago when you left Syracuse that you and I would be back having a conversation on a podcast?
And, Mike, I haven't been to a game. I think I came up there. I won a Vic Hansen Award. So I think that was in 2011 when I stopped playing. So I haven't been to Syracuse since 2011. But prior to that, I hadn't been there since, like, 2000. So I would love to come back and just sit in the stands and eat some popcorn, watch a game, and just really admire just the whole atmosphere. I would love to do that. Hopefully one day here in the near future, I'll be able to get back up there and just spend some time with the great people of Central New York.
Well, I know they would love to see you again. And it's been a long time since I've seen you. I think the last time I saw you in person, I think you were at the tail end of your NBA career.
Yep.
A remarkable 9-year career for a guy taken in the second round, by the way.
Yeah, hey, it don't happen no more. You know, it's crazy. It is very hard. It's hard to get 2 years in the NBA, even if you're a first round. But I look at it as an accomplishment. I'm 43 years old, and I still have dreams. I just refuse to tell my dreams. So, you know, I'm always on a – I've been on a – an arc in my life professionally and family-wise where it's been going good. And I think I'm maybe about 85% pitching on my dreams coming true. So I still got more dreams to accomplish, and I'm going to continue to dream. And if you're not a dreamer, then, you know, life is not good for you.
Well, gotta good luck chasing those.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that, Mike. I appreciate that.
And we know you're doing great. I know you'll do great with the Ignite. I'm going to be really interested in seeing how that goes for you. Good luck to Jason Jr. at Long Beach State. And thank you so much for taking the time here to join me on the podcast. It's always great to talk to you.
Thank you, man. And to all my Syracuse fans, miss you guys. Best fans in the world. They always talking about these other schools. They never gave us our Syracuse, to me, our just, you know, credit. Syracuse got some of the best fans in the world. They showed up every night, 20,000, 30, doesn't matter. So that goes underrated. And then also I want to tell this current Syracuse team, good luck. You guys playing under some great former players, and you guys got to kind of live up to that. So good luck to this team. I know they're going to do well. Coach Boeheim, I know he's going to get these guys going, and hopefully we can get back to the NCAA tournament and then see what happens.
Go All Q. right, Jason.
Hey. Thank you, Mike.
Appreciate it again.
All right, brother.
I want to thank Jason for joining me on the podcast today. And thanks to you out there as well for listening in. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and follow all of our complete coverage of Syracuse basketball on Syracuse.com. Until next time on the Inside Syracuse Basketball Podcast, I'm Mike Waters.